Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. You're tuned to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thank you so much for listening to the show, and thank you for helping us to celebrate creating and stories. Let's get together and let's tune our imaginations today. My cheeks are actually sore this morning, and they're sore from smiling. I'm feeling so much joy. Last night, I saw, for the very first time, the Northfield High School production of Rock and Roll Revival. A glorious evening, I have to say. This is a world-class production. Every aspect of the production amazed. And I now understand why there is such a mad following for this show. And I want you now to put 2024 March on your calendar now, because that's when you're going to need to get your rock and roll tickets for the next show. It's going to be 2 years before we see another one, and it is worth everything. I'm just amazed. I'm very impressed. And my voice might also be a little bit hoarse because it's been a few years, darn COVID, since I've been at a show and cheered and whooped and celebrated in a theater just packed with people. And my, I have really missed that world. And we absolutely need to come together to hear music, listen to stories, watch movies. I don't know if I fully understand the value of being together prior to our two-year pandemic ordeal. This being together to share events, artistic experiences, our talents, visions, and values is the fabric of community and likely the core component of every town in the world. We've all missed out on something in the past 2 years. We've all longed for something. And I understand the value of audience in a new way. This was an interesting experience as I was reflecting on the show last night. I've known that audience is another charged element of a performance, and it's what makes the show. The way I thought of it before, though, was that the audience was an exchange between artists and the people present for the experience. But I think I understand now in a different way that being together for something, a show, a concert, a game, a reading, a meeting, a service, a celebration, a protest, or a play, or a party, an opening, is better because of the presence of those with you. I don't think I ever appreciated the way that we all make these invisible connections as we experience something together. I think it helps us, it changes us, and it absolutely connects us. Missing something can be a great teacher. If you had asked any of us 5 years ago if we thought that all the shows 5 years in the future would be canceled and shut down, we would have thought, that's not possible. Maybe it was only 3 years ago that things were shut down, because they're coming back. But nonetheless, it's, you know, the idea of there not being some of those events happening is just, you know, would have been so far from our imaginations. And so I think there's no way we're going back to that time before community, when people didn't get together to share experiences. Really, if you think about it, was there ever a time in history when that was the case? A time where we kept to ourselves, kept our circles small? We would have said, no way, we are not going back to that. So maybe another piece of the mystery of the world this pandemic experience has taught us is that unless we find a way to preserve and remember and come together, the things that matter to us might go away. Sure, there are openings and closings and transitions in life, but how do we remember to hold what's dear to us? We tell stories, we make art, we connect, we support what matters to us, and we show up. So we come together to these experiences and create memories and keep history. This telling and protecting of our experiences and place matters. And that's part of what I love to do on Art Zany Radio, is have a place to remember that. So thank you for coming together with us today to make a show. My guests today in the Art Zany Radio studio are here to talk about the new film, Valley Grove, A Living Tapestry. I'm joined by Paul Krause and Gary Wagenbeck. I'm going to turn on the microphones and welcome them to the Art Zany Radio Studio.
Well, thank you so much, Paulo. It's such a great pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been a documentarian and a storyteller and, you know, and all of the aspects that go with that, the design and the music, and you've done some very memorable. Too many to list here, but a few of the more recent ones. Rain on Mars was featuring the Northfield High School students from the Young Sculptors Project. Mm-hmm. Genesis, The Art of Creation, featuring pastel artist Fred Summers. Harvest, A Community's History Founded in Bronze, about sculptor Ray Jacobson. I'm thinking about this time. It's the wheat, the story of wheat and how that is in our community, and that's really resonating today. And you've got short documentaries about sidewalk poetry, The Garden of Quiet Listening, Ruth's House of Hope. There's so many. Tell us a little more, for those that don't know you, about your work and your world.
Well, you know, it's been about 22 years since I got started in filmmaking.
Wow.
The very beginning of digital film or video, where you could actually do your own filming and editing and production, was really the late 90s, that's when I got caught up in the excitement of that type of production. Prior to that, of course, I was at WCAL Radio at St. Olaf College for 13 years, and there I produced several radio documentaries. So I thought some relatively interesting work there.
So the storytelling was always there.
Yeah, so it's been about 40 years. Okay, so that's almost like yesterday. But so I started out in radio and loved doing production. And then when I got the video bug, that was an exciting opportunity. And Dennis Wilcox and I, back in 2000, created the Northfield Community Video Project, and that's what really took off. We did 13 short documentaries, which we showed around town and had various people come together and talk about things that we noticed. Just for example, you know, I did something on the history of Central Park and the legacy of John and Ann North and the controversy surrounding that park. Its operation that goes back into the late 40s and a Supreme Court case in Minnesota. The history of Northfield is fascinating. I love the history of this town. And this town has been so giving to me as a creator. I think that's one of the things that those of us in the creative community really relish, being in Northfield, because there's so much talent, so many ways people express themselves. The artists are amazing, as you know. I mean, you've just being connected to the Arts Guild and all of the other organizations in town, you just have there's such excitement in as a creative person, because you can. I'm sitting in Blue Monday Coffee House several years ago, and I'm sitting and talking with Jake, Ray Jacobson, and we'd finished his piece. And Fred Summers comes in and sits down with us because they know each other really well. And Fred, I said, Fred, what are you up to? What are you doing? He said, well, I was out looking at my favorite oak tree today. Mm-hmm. I said, you have a favorite oak tree? No, you know Fred.
That makes sense.
He's a natural. He's out in nature all. I mean, this is his. That's his juice. I said, really? I said, what's that all about? Well, he said, I'm creating my largest painting I've ever done for a group in the cities, the Sisters, for their new building. And he said, they've commissioned me to do something, and I feel that there's an oak has got to be in that image. So I said, well, I said, where are you at in the process, Fred? And he said, well, I'm just starting. I'm just getting the canvas. I said, okay, I want to document the creation of this painting.
Wow.
And he said, cool. And that's how it happens when you're in a community where you can sit and there's an artist that says, gee, I've got this idea.
Mm-hmm.
My history is all about those encounters, and the current Gary Wagenbeck sitting beside me, who inspired me as well, at one point, Dennis Wilcox and I were, you and Mary Savina were doing a project, and Dennis was videotaping that. And that's how I first was introduced to Gary. And then the wild man, Miles Bakke, is another part of Valley Grove, and he's in the film. You know, he contacted me a little over 2 years ago and said, gee, Valley Grove is would like to do a history. Would you be interested in talking with us? I was like, oh, okay.
another light bulb went off.
All it, you know, you have these connections. If you've lived here long enough, you know so many people, and they're coming out and saying, I've got an idea.
Well, let's bring Gary into the conversation and introduce you to our listeners. I believe this is the first time you've been on Art Zany Radio.
First time on Art Zany, yes.
Yeah, so this is very exciting for us. You are the Carleton College Winifred and Atherton Bean Professor of Biology, Science, Technology, and Society Emeritus. The research you focus on is science education, marine biology, and ecology, and you are the president of the Valley Grove Preservation Society. So, and welcome to the show.
Well, great to be here.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about yourself and maybe how you made this connection to begin this project.
Well, I'd love to. Serendipity is a part of the story, and you mentioned Ray Jacobson earlier, and he was an acquaintance of mine. As a matter of fact, he invited me to co-teach with him back in the 1980s sometime, and I thought, oh, what's all this about? So there we go, another starting point that was catalytic, shall we say. And then the outline that Paul just gave traces back in my mind to a particular board meeting three years ago, for the Valley Grove Preservation Society. And Miles Bakke, whom you just mentioned, was sitting right by me. And we were meeting in the community room at the co-op before remodeling, when the community room was available for meetings. We used to meet there in the wintertime. And long story shorter, those of us interested in connected with the Valley Grove Preservation site have been plugged into the place and doing activities out there for a long time, 25, 30 years. And the interest in historical documentation slowly matured, shall we say, in our minds. And that particular evening, the history topic came up, and Miles Bakke mentioned Paul. And click. I thought, we got to follow up on this thread. And we did, and here we are. Long story shorter. A grant proposal and cooking some ideas and talking to Paul and talking to the board members and seeking funding. And Northfield Shares is involved, Inc. Seth Rindy Endowment within Northfield Shares, retired dentist Donald Nelson is behind the scenes financially. So there we have a moment.
Yeah, and I think
at a board meeting when things clicked.
And that's a great you know, that happens a lot in this town, right? Just this little click, just as you mentioned. Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I want to start with is, when I thought about sharing this story with our audience, the word preservation in the name of the organization, the Valley Grove Preservation Society, stood out to me. And, you know, I think the past few years have nudged us to think about, well, what matters? What's worth preserving in many different ways, aspects of our life? And so I think that, you know, I have to say, I've actually never been out to Valley Grove. And I know, but I've heard of it. It's been in the ethos, right, of this community for a long time. And so now my curiosity, of course, is piqued. And we should tell people that one of the reasons we're here is because there's going to be a showing. The premiere of the movie is tonight, Friday, the 25th of March, Valley Grove, A Living Tapestry. That is at 7 p.m. at the White's Cinema, which is on the Carleton College campus. It's free and open to the public. Mm-hmm. We just need to practice the COVID guidelines from Carleton. So tell me then, this idea of was preserving the way that it is now important to the process, or was it thinking about the future? Tell me about how that word preservation and the project came to be or combined.
Well, those of us involved in caring for two 19th century buildings and the land around it.
Yeah, so tell us the two buildings for people that also haven't been out there.
There are two big parts to the story. It's an 1862 stone church building.
1862. Just think about that.
1862 built. They were working on it during this Civil War, and legend has it that the building was dedicated in 1868. So the Civil War had wound down by then, and European settlers were coming in the 1850s at a high rate, and then the Civil War was a very disruptive period in this history of this corner of Minnesota. And so the number of settlers in the area was low at the time, just small. At one point, when there was a census done, there were 9 Norwegian families listed in the territory, for example. Mm. So then the soils are very fertile, and there's a mixture of prairie and forest lands, so that's fairly easy to start an agricultural project and grow some crops and have an oxen and maybe a horse or two if you're well-to-do and start growing some crops. And wheat became an easy-to-grow crop on the prairie soils that are common in the area fairly early. And so then there was a whole history of flour milling in the area here, which eventually was transported to Minneapolis. But it all started right here under our noses in the 1850s to 70s and 80s.
And what about that second building?
So the stone church but there's a photograph taken, we don't know when exactly, late 19th century. Maybe I'm going to estimate 1885, 1890 maybe. Photography was, roving photographers were around, and there's two photographs of the congregation from the time with lots of people lined up outdoors in their Sunday best, women in their nice white blouses, and the men in black, dark clothing lined up. And the congregation grew large, in other words, kids, families, expansion, and they outgrew the stone church and decided, okay, it's time to build a new church. A new church, 1894 is the new church, made of wood. And I suppose the wood mostly had to be imported because it was finished lumber, including Douglas fir, which had to be shipped in by rail from the Pacific Northwest. That's where Douglas fir comes from. So there's a history that goes to the ties to the Great Northern Railroad, I would think, etc. So then Wood Church, that congregation, existing congregation, used the Wood Church then through till the early 1970s. And as circumstances changed in farming and family size diminished and people just changed their lives in ways where the congregation diminished and to a smaller size, and eventually ended up disbanding in the 1970s. Not exactly this well. That congregation at Valley Grove Wooden Church disbanded in the sense that the remaining members joined Grace Lutheran Church in Nerstrand.
Mm.
And the church building in Nerstrand is very similar in design for the base part of the building. So two wooden churches from the late 19th century and that immediate vicinity are of considerable historic interest.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you'll see all these images in the film that Gary is talking about, that photograph. I mean, it's just, it's a stunning, stunning piece because you just see the joy of this community and the expanse of it and how they clearly needed a larger church than the stone church that's right next door. And it's one of the remarkable things about this site is that it's probably the only place in America where we have two churches within, 100 feet of each other, basically, side by side. So they're kind of like sisters. And the history that that you get as you see the film. So let me just mention one thing, and that is that there's layers of meaning associated with this site and with the Valley Grove experience. Gary, as a preservationist, and the other preservationists who are concerned about sustaining, making sure that it continues on. It's a remarkable piece of the project. And that's kind of where I started was the history of the Preservation Society and all the preservation things that have been done and the work on the prairies, the surrounding prairies. But I soon realized that, there's so many layers of meaning for those who have been associated directly or indirectly with Valley Grove, that I began to sense that we really needed to have, as the metaphor of the tapestry, we have threads that run through the tapestry, and each thread is a different color, and each thread represents a different perspective. So the beginning perspective is the historian's thread. So that's the first thing you'll see in the film, is the historian's thread. And that is the remarkable presentation by Jeff Sauvé, from St. Olaf, the former archivist at St. Olaf.
Yes, he's a delight and a great storyteller.
A great storyteller and an author. An amazing. He did just an amazing. He's standing outside of beside the one church, and he's telling you the history of it. And of course, I've got all the imagery and all of the supporting stuff to make it as interesting visually as possible. But he does just such a compelling job of this whole, from the 1850s, through to today, and what it means to people who accidentally come to Valley Grove and go, oh my God, this is an amazing place. It is truly, and one of his final statements in the film is that Valley Grove is truly a magical place. Now, when you go there, you will begin to sense the magic, and that's the mystery. There's a mystery there. It's a very, for me, as time I spent there, and I spent 2 years there, seeing and feeling and exploring, talking with people, getting all these different points of view, I realized that there's a profound mystery at Valley Grove. It may have something to do with the fact that it's up on this wonderful hill. So you get up on the hill and have this incredible view of the surround. And it has a majesty, it has a presence that excites people, whether they're there for the church service, Christmas Eve, whether they're there for a summer gathering, whether it's a wedding, or someone who is being interred, I can't begin to explain the feelings that you get. But that's what I try to get in the film itself is the feeling of magic and mystery.
And I want to mention, if people are listening and are thinking, well, I'm curious about this, if you want to visit the Valley Grove Preservation Society's website, it's right. valleygrovemn.org, and you'll get some of those images the spaciousness, the history. I don't, you know, there's just some of those angles when you're looking up the road at the church, two sites.
Here's a point to add about the fact that it's on top of a hill. My geologist friends from Carleton, Mary Savina, being the prime person, reminds me that the ridges and the hills that Valley Grove sits on are part of a set around the state park and just to the east a ways. And there, if you look at a topographic map and check the elevation, it's the topographic high spot between Minneapolis and Chicago.
Wow.
So if you want to get a view.
It's up here. See.
That's interesting. Yeah. And that's right down the road.
Yes, it's right down the road. And accessible to all. And it's, anyway, in the film, I try to create these layers. So we have the historian, then we have the geologist. Mary Savina talks about the geology and going back to the ice ages and how this had something to do with the lay of the land. And we talk with Miles Bakke, the naturalist, who seeks out. Well, you have to see it. It's too amazing for words. So we have a couple of naturalists with slightly different points of view, and we have a board member. We have visitors. Ultimately we have the weaver. Who's doing tapestries for inside the stone church. So the whole thing is one thread after another, and as you weave it together at the end, you have the completed tapestry, which I think symbolizes Valley Grove. So that's, it took quite a while to come to the idea of how is this going to be presented, because it's a rich subject. I mean, it's
right, you know, and you're trying to tell this story within a very short window,
hour,
right?
Within an hour, tell this vast story.
So I'm curious, as a filmmaker, when you go in and you have an idea, I mean, you've probably talked to the board and they, you know, said some of the highlights that they absolutely want to include.
Yeah.
But you're trying, that word meaning popped out to me, that you're trying to pull something that's deep, a metaphor or a richness that will, you know, bring the work to life.
Exactly. And I think that's the role of the artist. The artist is to create meaning. Now, maybe it's a very personal, you know, all you're saying is that, well, this is what it means to me. But you like to think that, well, perhaps if I invite another point of view and ask them, what does it mean to them? Like Fred Somers, he's one of I have two artists. And so Fred is one of the artists. And, of course, Valley Grove, his heart and soul is at Valley Grove, because it was that area that inspired him to change his art from being something very abstract and wild into something about nature. He's immersed in nature, and he represents that in his work, and it's so vital to him. And the meaning of Valley Grove is deep to him, and the way he expresses it. Of course, this is what an artist can do. An artist can paint a picture for you. You know, he said, look at the color. He says, I love about this place is the color. And so he describes some of the color interactions. And as a colorist, which is what he does in pastel and oil, out of the very highest level of accomplishment, it's moving. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's one of the things that, if you come and see this film, you will. I almost guarantee you will be moved.
I think you had a guarantee on the email that you sent me.
I did. I said, I guarantee.
You'll find joy.
Double your money back. Absolutely.
Well, Gary, let's talk about the land that's there. It's, you know, a vast space. And as you look at it from a biologist perspective, tell me what you describe, or how, you know, what people will find in that environment.
Well, maybe I would start just with recognizing that I've lived in the area 35 years now, and I've only been around the area for 50. And as I joke with families who live in the neighborhood whose families have been around for 150 years, I jest that when I've been here that long, then I'll be a real whatever. I'll be really super anchored. But the reason for talking this way is that those of us involved in the preservation work at the site are connected. We feel a connection. We end up being quite passionate about the site based on whatever interests we have. And for me, it's about the land as well as the history. And sort of longer story shorter, 22 years ago probably it is now, farmland that was surrounding the church buildings came up for sale. And those of us who were involved in preservation up to that point were, what shall we say, shocked by the presence of a for sale sign down by the road near the driveway of the site. And we did some quick checking, and long story shorter, we ended up taking $3,000 out of our bank, out of our account. We didn't have much money at the time, maybe $5,000 total, and went to the realtor in Faribault and signed a purchase agreement to buy all of the land, all of the farmland.
Was that the down payment?
That was the down payment.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I can't believe you could have gotten it.
For the asking price of $414,000.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which 22 years ago was a big number.
Even more than a number.
Yeah.
And we had 6 months to raise that amount of money. And then about January 3rd or so, when the office in Faribault opened again, our treasurer walked in with a $414,000 check, and we owned the land.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a miracle story.
Well, it reflects the value of that land to the people that care about.
So the preservation crew, shall we call them, really dug in and worked, 50 different angles on funding, and we ended up with the appropriate amount. Federal Forest Legacy was involved, some of the neighbors, and after one of our meetings, there were several $1,000 checks in a cap that was passed around the room to get things started, and the stories go on.
As far as ecology, how would you describe
the purchase of the land had to do with the soil type and kind of protection of the value of the site, the rural character of the site, because of we thought that the way to proceed would be to think of restoring grasslands that were estimated to be present, some mixture of grasslands and forests, since we're right next door to the big Wood State Park. There's a mixture of forest and grasses, historically speaking, based on soil type. We decided to try to reconstruct those type of habitats from scratch.
Because it had been turned to farmland.
Because it had been turned to farmland, and it was erodible. It's hilly and highly erodible and fragile. And our ruse was to honor the settlement history. This is the landscape, estimated landscape, that European settlers would have seen when they came into the area in the 1850s. Mm-hmm. So let's use that as a lens for guiding our efforts. And the various players, from the board to others, have agreed with that approach, and we've had a lot of help and spent $27,000 on wildflower seed, and the list goes on. And the relationship with the state park is really good, and the relationship with the neighbors is really good, and We have covenantal arrangement with a landowner that has helped us a lot, that's immediately to the west. So those of us that live in the neighborhood, and I live just a mile away, and I have a tractor and chainsaws and the appropriate equipment to do land care, as some of the other neighbors do, and I recruit help from the neighbors, and sometimes we hire help. For example, when we do a managed burn, because grasses do well if there's a fire to help suppress trees, and we use a local jobber to help us with that, Zumbro Valley Forestry, which their crew lives just a few miles from where we're sitting. And so we're able to care for the land, even though most of us don't have the muscle or the skills to do it alone. We need help. So that's where volunteers come in a small scale for managing brushy trees that come in and into the grassland area, or in the case of putting a managed burn on the grasses to enhance their growth, then we hire a crew of six.
That feels like a
with the appropriate,
you know, a giant task, because it's a giant piece of land.
Yeah. It's 114 acres, and then there are scientific and natural areas adjacent between the Valley Grove properties and the state park. So there's what should we call it? Wildland or wildland plus restored land, from the state park to the scientific and natural areas to the Valley Grove property per se, and then a neighbor's property across the street, and then the property that I own just down the hill that I've done the same thing on.
Yeah.
I do restoration work on 80 acres that's just down the hill. And so there is a sort of community of folks who are treating the land in this historical, restorative, let's see what we can learn, as well as care for the land by putting in natives.
And so that was part of what your task was, to capture that on film.
The passion of it. I mean, to me, that's what a film, as a filmmaker, I want to capture emotion. I want to capture feeling. I want to capture meaning. I invested in some new drones. I got some quite lovely aerial shots of this prairie and in the context of the churches, and as you flow across the prairie grass in the color, and then come across the big woods, it's just, I mean, you can see why Gary and others in the community are passionate about this, because it is just so beautiful.
Did you do this in multiple seasons?
Oh, yeah. Well, so, I originally thought it would take a year to produce, to do the basic shooting, because I did want all the different seasons if I could get them in. And so, you know, and we end at Christmas. At the Christmas service, this is this wonderful annual event that has been going on for decades, where, you know, Christmas Eve there is a regular service, and people come, and it's just so, well, it's indescribable. Mm-hmm. I have been many times, and I knew that would be the last thing you see in the movie is the winter scene with the church and the lights in the window and the people singing, and the candles being lit. This is what, as a filmmaker, you just think, oh my God, I've got this. This is such a gift. You know, I don't have to go and create a set. That's what, you know, if you're doing fiction, you create sets, you know, or you find place. But this is just like a gift. Immeasurable gift. All the different seasons, it's just...
Was there anything when you were filming that you thought, wow, this surprised me. I wasn't expecting to be able to capture this on film.
Yeah, well, yeah. There are several moments in the film that I was surprised. I won't leave. I'll leave those. I'll just say that there are some surprising moments, I think, for everyone. But I guess in many ways, the opportunity was an affirmation of something that I'd already held in my heart. I knew this was a special place because every time I had gone there, I felt this. There's a spiritual quality, to the place that. I remember one time I was up there doing some shooting in the evening because I wanted to get that nice light coming. You know, you shoot early in the day or later in the day, ideally. I was coming back from going down into the prairie and into the woods. And there's a little waterfall down in the woods, in the big woods, that where the stone actually came from, for the stone church came from that particular. You could see exactly where it came from. But walking back in the early evening and walking through the cemetery and just noticing the personal touches, all the little details, and of course the range of time from a most recent headstone to one that was 150 years old. I mean, I was overcome with this sense of. A place of spirit, a place of deep meaning, and then as I interviewed people, that was just revealed over and over and over again. Yeah,
yeah, and I can imagine that is going to be passed through to the audience as they see this, and even if they visited this, these are going to be perspectives that they haven't been able to see.
Right.
And so I want to remind people that the Valley Grove, A Living Tapestry, which is a film by Paul Krause, my guest today, it airs Friday the 25th of March 2022 at 7 p.m. That's at the White Center and the White Cinema at Carleton College. It's free and open to the public. Folks are invited to join us. And Gary Wagenbeck is also here. He is the president of the Valley Grove Preservation Society. That website is valleygrovemn.org. And you can get a look at some of Paul's work on the YouTube site that you have, Dancing Sun Multimedia YouTube. I've got a link on that on the KYMN Radio website so that you can take a look at that. Or there's a new website, dancingsunmedia.com, which is coming soon. It's almost done.
It's available.
Okay.
It's available. I just haven't, quote, you know, made a big production of launching it, but that will come soon.
Yes. Yeah, so
I also just want to mention one thing. The doors will be open at 6:30, so you can come a little early, get a good seat.
Yeah,
the White Cinema is just a great gift to Northfield. Oh, big screen, wonderful sound, really amphitheater seating. Just you cannot find a better place, I don't think, in Northfield to show a film. It's just a treat.
And I want to mention, because we're airing this on Friday, but it'll also air again on Saturday. So if people miss this event, where will they be able to see it next?
Well, I'm going to eventually, within a short period of time, it'll be available for streaming on my YouTube channel. So that will be one source. Also, I have a contract with Twin Cities Public Television. Isn't that the sun?
The
bursts
sun,
through.
You folks can't see that, but we can. It just gloriously shines.
We're excited here. So it picked up the excitement. But the Twin Cities Public Television, I have a 3-year contract with them. Shortly, they'll begin broadcasting this film on their Minnesota channel on the history evening, probably Wednesday evening. Wednesday all day. I mean, they broadcast the film 5 times a day. And they do that typically about 3 or 4 months out of the year. So it gets a couple hundred viewings over the contract. So it'll be available on Twin Cities Public Television.
And many of your films have aired.
Yeah,
they have
aired all of the major documentaries that I've done. So I thank them for that ability to promote it. And then I'll have some other screenings probably in the next 4 or 5 months here and there, just smaller venues. But so there'll be lots of opportunities.
It's great. But this is the premiere if you want to join us for that.
This is the big one. Yeah.
Exactly. you know, there have been, we talked a little bit about some of the developments of the, you know, filming and your ability to use drones and the camera qualities. And, you know, I think I would imagine the way the cameras are able to work with different lights has improved.
Oh, yes.
And there's just a lot of changes that have happened
in
being able to make films. And just in that short 20 years that you've been doing films.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Really. The tools that we have today are so far advanced from what we had 20 years ago. And so your palette is, you know, the colors that you have as a filmmaker have expanded exponentially.
I like that explanation.
Yeah. Well, you get to play a little bit more. You know, finger paint.
And for you, Gary, in looking at the, you know, care of the church and the land and, you know, the idea of the preservation of this space, I would imagine even those tools that are available to you of knowing what the land needs, what the, you know, space needs, that's evolved as well.
Well, yes, I think about that arena quite a lot. The season is soon upon us. From spring through fall is the time when we are busy focusing especially on the land care. And so the plantings that I mentioned from 20 plus years ago to create native habitat, you're planting native grasses. I mean, 30 or 40 different species and $27,000 worth of
that's a lot of seeds
native flower seed, many seeds of which are the size of pepper on your table. This is a delicate matter to get these seeds in the ground. So the availability of supporting organizations like Prairie Restorations Inc. and other organizations like Prairie Moon, a seed group here in Minnesota, help us as in addition to just collecting seed ourselves, because Carlton and St. Olaf have arboretums that when the seeds are ripe, we can get permission to go hand collect seed, and we do. So the whole support structure for working with seeds is matured in a nice, sophisticated way.
Mm-hmm. And how are we able to know, we want to bring it back to that late, you know, 1870s, how do we know that we're getting there, or what records exist from then?
Well, that's an important question, because that's the frame of reference. And you know, historical herbarium studies, pressed plants, in other words, Carlton has a vast collection along that line. And the Carlton has a faculty member who is really good at identifying plants, Professor Mark McCone. Mm-hmm. And so when the push comes to shove, and Nancy Breaker as well, in the arboretum are very helpful, knowledgeable with regard to details about plants. And then just preparing the soil for placing seed requires a few special manipulations. And you put the seed out so that it sits on the soil during the winter and freeze-thaw. The worst possible winter weather is good for the prairie seeds, because the freeze-thaw of the ice activates seeds, it turns out.
Oh.
So learning about all of that is kind of a little bit counterintuitive.
Yes, certainly.
And then Charles Umbenauer, biology faculty member at St. Olaf, has done studies of the fire history of the area, because fires in the 18th and 19th century in the grasslands around this area influenced what vegetation remained long-term or was able to grow long-term. And we think that fires occurred in the area immediately surrounding the Bigwood State Park, where the Valley Grove site is located.
And like with a regular frequency, then?
With enough frequency to maintain grasses. So knowing a little bit, enough of that history to lead us in the direction of replanting grasses is what led us in that direction. And then once the grasses start to grow, they're just little guys for quite a while, and then some weedy plants come in, of course, from ragweed to whatever. And so then mowing is needed to, for the first few years, to manipulate to keep the light level high enough on the natives. So you mow the weedy annuals and let the light in. And some invasives tend to come in. Some ash trees seeds blow in, and some various other plants blow
in. Gary's onto it, I'll tell you.
I would bet.
Then we think of a way to suppress those, either using fire or clipping, or in a few cases, selective use of an herbicide. That's where a volunteer crew comes in, and in the film that Paul shows, there's a crew out suppressing some of the small weedy trees that are coming in, because we live in a part of Minnesota where the rainfall is high enough per annum, about 34 inches, that trees grow well. And in a grassland area, if you don't burn, there's enough rainfall for trees to do well.
And they would take over
then.
They
will take over.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't want if you're going to restore the prairie.
Well, it's a mix of grass and forest. So a fire takes a mixture of the sort that we're discussing in the direction of grasses, and without fire, then tend to go toward trees.
Yeah.
So that's another sort of transformation, and
absolutely,
it makes me think about this idea of, I think we're just beginning to understand some of the ways of nature even after all of these years, and I'm thinking about the way that we've learned about trees having networks and communicating and I would imagine those prairie grasses with those roots that go. How many feet? 20 feet? I don't know.
The max of 16 to 18, possibly 20. And some of the legumes go really deep, and some of the grasses go at least 6-7 feet deep. When we're used to just garden plants, let's say if that's our experience, it's a challenge to wrap the mind around the robust nature of the root systems of prairie plants.
Mm-hmm.
Very extensive.
And so I feel like we're going to keep learning, and thankfully one of the places that we can go to experience and understand and, have one of the things I think the pandemic did was it taught people that being outside is so great for us.
Well, and I think also with respect to Valley Grove, because it is such a the prairie that surrounds the church has been restored to the point where you do get that feeling, okay, this is what it was like when the first settlers arrived. And you need you need some place to experience it. You see, you need to be able to walk out through it. You need to be able to touch it. I mean, you can walk along the path, and all these different plants that are emerging that you've never seen before, but they're natives. They're being nurtured, and so it's a visceral experience. You really feel the prairie, and as you move down into the big woods, you feel the big. I mean, it's really a great gift to those who want to explore nature in an authentic, immediate way. Mm-hmm. So it is Valley Grove, again, it's just one more dimension to its richness.
And that's what we want people to understand or learn a little bit more from this film, Valley Grove, A Living Tapestry, Friday, the 25th of March, 2022 at 7 p.m. at the White's Cinema. And you can get more information at the Valley Grove Preservation Society, valleygrovemn.org, or Paul's new website, dancingsunmedia.com, or his YouTube channel, Dancing Sun Multimedia YouTube. This time has been so great to spend with you.
Thank you, Paula.
We hope that there are people listening who will seek out this film if they are unable to come tonight, because there'll be other opportunities to see it. But I can't wait, because you've done such beautiful work, and I imagine there'll be more joy coming our way after we watch this.
Thank you. We'll guarantee joy.
We could all use some more
of that. We can all use more joy.
Gary Wagenbeck and Paul Krause, thank you for joining me on Art Zany Radio.
Thank you. Thank you,
folks, Paul. I really appreciate that you're here with us. And I'm going back to a quote that I first aired maybe a couple years ago that came up to my mind. It's, everything is simpler than you think, and at the same time, more complex than you imagine. That's Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, I believe is how you say that. It just reminds me of what we're talking about today. So go out and experience the world. Folks, you've been listening to the show that celebrates creating in stories. And please don't forget to add some Art Zany to your life. And of course, in the meantime, till next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.